Hello and welcome to the Marketing Meetup podcast. My name is Joe Glover and I'm very grateful for having you here today. Today we're going to be hearing from Adelina Chalmers. She is known as the Geek Whisperer and she helps technical people understand management and the other way around. And sorry if you can hear rustling in the background, that is my dog sleeping away. I'm sure he's having a lovely, lovely time. So today's talk from Adelina is all about internal communications. And specifically, she speaks about a case study where there was a marketer and a financial director, and they had difficulty communicating between the two of them. Adelina delivered this talk in a really interesting way because she chose to do so without any slides, just with a flipboard, and she got the audience really engaged in the talk, looking to get answers from them, and very much sort of adapting her talk as time went on, as the audience reacted to it. It was really quite something to watch, and I actually had a moment of real gratitude and thankfulness as I was watching Adelina go about her business. This is a interesting talk too, because she actually speaks about on a very biological, neurological way about how messages actually resonate with people and how you can use this to speak about your messages and get other people to understand them, but also to buy into them. If you'd like anything more from the Marketing Meetup, head to themarketingmeetup.com. We've got the rest of our podcasts, we've got our events, we've got our blog, we've got our newsletter. There's so much there that's all just designed to help you become a better marketer. That's all we want to do, because we just hold the belief that if you become a better marketer, then you'll be happier in your work. If you're happier in your work, then you'll become happier at home too. If you're happier at work and home, then you're a happier life. And I don't think there's anything better in life than trying to make other people happy. Not by making people happy, but truly, happy in their souls. Anyway, this is getting quite profound. But in fact, perhaps it's appropriate to be profound because I also want to thank from the bottom of my heart, my good friend and top contributor to the Marketing Meetup, Baz, who is from Bravo Marketing. They're the sponsors of this podcast, they're the people who put together this podcast. And what Baz does is deliver creative solutions for marketers to drive actual engagement. Now that's really important because I think creativity is one of those things that so many of us lose when we've got our heads in the day-to-day grind. But with someone like Baz, he comes in and just breathes a breath of fresh air into any business, any campaign. But he also focuses on the engagement and actually how that delivers results. Because it's easy as anything to deliver a load of content, but it's really hard to actually deliver any sort of engagement off it. I hope you really enjoy this talk. It's something a bit unique, but if you listen for the little bits of gold dust that are throughout this talk, then I've no doubt you'll gain an awful lot from it. Thank you very much, and I hope to hear from you soon.
Right, first of all, if you think one of my boobs looks weird, it's because I have a phone on it. I'm starting the night on a high. Simon mentioned, brilliant talk, Simon. Simon mentioned Theresa May. In my last job, I actually kind of had to work with her. So after she came to that meeting, actually, I decided to give up my job. And I started this business, and that was 8 years ago. So when I saw that she was taking over Brexit, I'm not religious, but I did this, and I hoped things will go well. You might be wondering, why is the Marketing Meetup inviting a geek whisperer? Because you're not geeks, surely, and I usually work with engineers. Engineers and people in other departments often complain to me about the marketing people, and they see marketing as a cost rather than an investment. I traditionally teach people how to pitch for investment. I'm not going to do that today because I don't know enough about your jobs to do that. However, I'd like to give you an example from a real person that's part of the Marketing Meetup group who emailed me. Unfortunately, I think she's not here tonight, but emailed me about a real situation, a real challenge she was facing. And I'd like to explain to you what happened and how hopefully you will never be in that situation yourself. This situation will apply to to any department, not just the chief financial officer that you might have to negotiate with them. But for this situation, this particular lady, I'm going to call her Mary. That's not her real name. Mary and her chief operations director, I'm going to call him John, constantly had challenges with their chief financial officer. I'm going to call him Martin. They're all are not real names, I promise you. So don't try and search which company in Cambridge has those three names because it's not real. And every time Mary and John, Mary and her COO, would try to put forward a marketing plan, the CFO would try to get them to justify it. But also, not just that, but actually try to tell them how to do their jobs. Has anybody had that happen to them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get this a lot from various people complaining to me that other people, often engineers or CFOs, trying to tell them, especially marketeers, how to try to tell them how to do their jobs. And this is what happened. They were in a meeting, and Mary and John spoke to Martin and the other leadership team about this new website and about this new marketing strategy they were going to implement. And they thought, they had a conversation about it, and they thought by the end they had agreed in the meeting that Mary and John, the COO and the head of marketing, were going to carry on with commissioning this new website. They went on, they put a call out, they got proposals, they approved the proposal. It's all now to invoicing stage. And they forward the invoice to the CFO, who says, what is this about? I thought we're still talking about it. They had thought, the marketing guy and the COO had thought that they had agreed on this new marketing plan. And the CFO thought it's just a proposal that has not been approved yet. How did they get to that stage? Does anybody have any suggestions before I go on and explain to you, do a post-mortem of what happened, and hopefully this never happens to you?
Assumptions.
Assumptions, yeah.
Qualify
it and
clarify.
Yeah.
And do you get the answer in writing?
Yeah. What else do you think happened? Sorry?
Nobody listened.
Thank you. What was your name?
Emma.
Thank you, Emma. That's a very, very good point. So I'd like to show you an example of what listening to understand looks like and what listening to respond looks like. This is something that not just engineers, the people that I work with the most, have. I've noticed it in 99.99% of the population. And I have a theory about why this happens. So here's what listening to understand looks like. We want to implement this new marketing strategy, says Mary. Martin will say, that's not going to work. How on earth are you going to justify that? We tried that before and we wasted £5,000 on it or £50,000 on it. This is not good enough. I'm not confident this is a plan we should go ahead with. This is what listening to respond looks like. That's a classic example of listening to respond. Listening to understand. This is what listening to understand looks like. We want to create this marketing strategy. Can you tell me a bit more when you say marketing strategy? Do you mean A, B, or C? And when you say A, B, do you mean that you will get this result by 2020 or will it get to this result by 2020? So when you say we'll have that result, is this how we want to measure it or did I misunderstand? Do you see the different dynamic? Mm-hmm. It's the same conversation, but just had differently. What else you could say, well, I'm actually concerned, you know, because last time we spent the money on this and it didn't work. Can you tell me a bit more about why do you think this is going to work this time? The conversation it opened rather than, it's not going to work, it didn't work last time, we're done. This is why, the theory I have, the reason why we listen to respond, and in a meeting when someone asks you, when you were saying, you know, about politicians who are asked the question, but they just waffle, it's because you think about it in school. When we were asked a question, the teacher would say, what's 2 plus 2? And someone would say 5, and the other kids would laugh at them. Or the teacher would say, sorry, wrong answer, sit down. And you were expected to listen to be able to respond. You didn't really listen to be able to understand because you were tested on certain things that you had to know to respond to. And I think in corporate, we are moved from this approach of, I ask you a question, you have to have an answer. And now in corporate, we expect people to be honest all of a sudden without anybody giving them a memo that now you have to be honest and tell me if you don't know the answer to this. Most people, or most engineers I talk to, 99% of them say to me they don't have the guts and they would never say that they don't know the answer to this question. And they all fudge it, as they call it. I'd like to go back to the situation we explained with Mary and John and Martin to give you a technique that I use. And once I understood this for myself, it changed my life completely. There's three different parts to the brain in terms of cognition. If there's any neuroscientist in the room, this is not an accurate description of the brain. I spoke about this with a few professors at Cambridge in neuroscience and at other universities, and the first thing they wanted me to clarify and do a disclaimer in front of everybody, this is not what the brain actually looks like. I said, no, just for comprehension purposes. So one part of the brain that's absolutely crucial in meetings or in work or when you're trying to persuade someone of anything is the amygdala. It's actually shaped a bit like an almond, but I don't know how to draw, so I just made a circle. The amygdala, like Simon is not good at maths, I'm rubbish at drawing. So there we are. I could never sell a painting for 186 million, that's for sure. So the amygdala is the part of the brain that deals with survival. If this part of the brain is activated during a conversation or a meeting you have at work, the meeting logic is out of the window. You know someone's amygdala has been irritated in a meeting if they have one of these three reactions: fight, flight, or freeze. The way these manifest is things like people get angry or red in the face and they start shouting, they want to run out of the room, or their mind goes blank and they say nothing. And they go, or they start bluffing. And that's actually still their mind going blank. They're just trying to find. The reason the amygdala activates is when people don't understand. Can everybody see this? Sorry, I know there's that thing in the middle. Can everybody see it? No? Yes? Yes. The amygdala lights up when it doesn't understand why. Why are we doing it like this? Or it doesn't agree this is the right reason to do things. This part of the brain has this fight, flight, or freeze reaction. Usually in a conversation, it's about you don't understand the problem that they're trying to solve. Or you don't agree this is the right problem to solve. Bear with me, because it sounds really abstract at the moment. The second part of the brain is the limbic system, is the emotional center of humans. And it has lots of emotional triggers that I'm not going to go through right now unless they come up in the talk. But essentially, when information comes in, the brain searches, like Google, but extremely quickly through its brain to understand from memories and from imagination and through its beliefs and values, tries to understand what this person is saying. And it filters out anything that doesn't fit their worldview. This is why when you have a marketeer trying to convince a CFO, a chief financial officer, of something, unless the marketeer starts speaking only in numbers and in bottom lines, the financial person's memories, imagination, beliefs, values, the way they see the world, their expertise, feels, if it is not spoken in the way they understand, they feel threatened and they have a fight, flight, or freeze reaction. This is why when I work with engineers, they don't understand leaders and leaders don't understand them. And that's one of the big, hottest challenges between people in a company. But when, and there's the other part of the brain, which is the logical brain, the neocortex, and this is where empathy is and self-awareness. And I will try, this is something I teach in about 2 hours, but I'll try to summarize it in less than 5 minutes now. So imagine when Mary told about this marketing plan to Martin, the CFO, and for some reason she thought they had agreed that they're going to commission this work, and he thought it's just an idea, this is not something we're going ahead with. Like Emma said earlier, when information came in, the CFO took a few points from the information that was given. We're planning to do this thing. We're planning to commission some websites. And created an image in his head created a story in his head. And this is what the limbic system does. It creates a story about what reality looks like because it doesn't listen to understand. And the CFO just hears a few highlights. You know when they say, oh, give him some highlights. Why do we like sound bites? Because it's just a few highlights that help the brain create a story in their mind of what reality looks like. So the CFO, when they had this conversation, when they were talking about it, and he challenged it, he thought, they get it, I'm not happy with this yet. But they thought because they discussed it, this is agreed. But nobody said in the meeting, like you said, there were assumptions. Nobody said in that meeting, right, so what we're going to do is we're going to get for these three quotes and we'll come back to you when we have the final quote of the invoice. Nobody said that. Nobody spelled that. And this is another thing that I've seen is so many companies, nobody takes minutes these days. Nobody writes, this is the agreed actions that everybody's going to take. Everybody starts assuming that everybody else knows what's going on. And then you have a situation where 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 5 weeks later, you have the invoice at the door. You've agreed everything with the customer. And the CFO goes, hang on. I didn't think we're doing this. When did you say we're doing this? I didn't think this is what we're doing. And it's because the limbic system of the CFO created a story which was never challenged because nobody actually spelled out and said, this is what we're agreeing to do in this meeting, correct? Never spelled it out. And that's because everybody listens to respond, they don't listen to understand. I was in a meeting a few weeks ago with one of my core customers. I'm not going to say any names. And my customer, who pays me about £20,000, is one of my nice contracts. She spoke for 15 minutes and then said to me, so does that make sense? You know what you're doing for the next 6 months for us? And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't understand a single word what you just said. And she looked at me shocked. I mean, she's, you know, quite high up. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, when you say change management, what do you mean by that? When you say resilience at work, what do you mean by that? When you say we want people to be able to resist and be able to cope with change, what does that mean? What do you want me to do with all these things in reality? And she looked at me and said, Jesus, do you know what? I have no idea what I'm telling you. My boss said that to me, and I just wanted to give it to you, and I hoped you will know what the hell that means. And I said to her, would you like me to speak to your boss? And kind of have a, and this is what I'm getting, you know, very senior people now to the point that they're hiring me to be honest with them. And I just thought, I didn't think that was my job. Like, surely your staff can be honest with you. But what I've discovered is that people are scared to be honest with their bosses. Why? Why are people scared to be honest with their bosses? Because I tell their bosses, I've told the CTO in a company that all his engineers hate him. All the engineers that I worked with anyway. And he was shocked. 4 years, he had no idea. And he just thought all of them were just a bit weird. You know, it's like, no, you're the top CTO, so you're the weirdest one here, mate. Anyway, so this is what's happening. The limbic system is trying to protect you. So it takes a few data points, it takes a few bits of information, and it creates a story, but usually the story is negative because it's trying to prevent you from falling in a hole or being caught by the lion. So that's why, for example, if most you're scared to tell your boss that they're an idiot, it's because you're worried they're going to fire you or you're worried your brain will say to you, your career will be over. You will never be able to work in marketing. Everybody, you'll be the pariah of Cambridge. Nobody will want to hire you if you sue this company. You'll be this, you'll be that, you'll be the other. And here's where the magic happens. The neocortex is there to give you self-awareness. This is something we have that animals don't. This is why we're the head of the food chain. I don't want to go into that, but allegedly we're smarter than animals. And the reason we are smarter than animals is because of self-awareness. Animals have this as well, but they don't have this. The reason self-awareness is crucial to being confident and to know doing your job properly and being assertive at work is to realize this is not based on fact. This is a story that your brain told you is reality and you believed it. If you want a few examples of this, you know, I've had many, many people tell me their stories, their limitations. I've had lots of people telling me when I started my business that I'm too fat to run a business. I don't have shoes that fit for someone to run a business. I haven't worked in tech, so who am I to start working in tech after working nine years in human rights? This is all their limitations, was their stories, because they were putting themselves in my shoes and going, Jesus Christ, in your case, I wouldn't have the guts to do that. But 8 years on, I mean, this afternoon I was talking to the ARM president, advising him about one of his core strategies. You know, I've worked at Fujitsu with very senior people in Fujitsu and with many other companies, and I'm just someone who worked in human rights. And it's just because I dared to go beyond no. And one of the key things that Helen Adams told me, who's one of the former vice presidents in sales at ARM, she said to me, if in a sales meeting I get no, I'm on the right track. If in the sales meeting I get yes first, I propose too little. And this is, but we're scared of no because the limbic system tells you no is bad. Because we would have been, if we got no when we were part of a tribe, we would have been rejected and killed. And this is why we're scared of no, but actually no is great because you know where the boundaries are. You know what's good and what isn't. I'm at the moment going through a process where someone has told me no four times for an application. I can't speak openly about what it is, but I can tell you now I'm going to the local MP and I've complained to the complainer of the complaint. I told them I'm like a dog with a bone. I'm not letting this go. It's going to happen. And my boyfriend and several other friends said, Jesus Christ, I feel so sorry for them. They have a legal team of like 20 and it's me. But I negotiated contracts with ARM. I mean, ARM are an IP company. You know, they are extremely difficult about IP. And yet I got them to agree that my IP is my IP and is not theirs. So if I did that with ARM, I can do it with anybody else. I hope this gave you a few tips and ideas about how to convince other departments that marketing is awesome. Because actually everything we do is marketing. And I would love to have a longer chat about that because I have some ideas of how I could pitch that, but I didn't have time to put those forward tonight. But I just want to say, I hope this brain model gives you an idea of how to be more assertive, how to get your confidence and how to get yourself across to other departments and convince them, it's a very engineering term, convince them that you know what you're doing and they shouldn't be telling you how to do SEO or marketing strategies. Have a good evening, everybody. Thank you for having me.